Thank you very much. And well, the final round, filled with museum colleagues, Joan-Yves Spicer, please join me. Charles Kang, just joining the Rijksmuseum, he started March 1st. Joan-Yves, if you would like to sit here, please, because that's the order of the slides. I have to be strict. And this is your microphone, you have the little machine. And I think a really important topic, it hasn't been really raised yet, is collecting and exhibiting in museums, and especially the changing narrative, because I think I will be sitting down in a minute, but the changing narrative, because we have been discussing so much, but I think the world is changing, but the museums are changing. Taco, you mentioned how long you were working in the Rijksmuseum. I work even longer in the Mauritshuis, and I think the only constant thing when you work in a museum is the constant change. And I think a lot is changing, and the narrative is changing. And so my question to all of you would be, if you change the narrative, does that require different objects? So, Joan-Yves, if you would like to start, please.
Well, the answer is yes.
Good.
I could stop there.
Please don't. Continue.
No, but I won't. Excuse me. Since I have been at the Walters, which is now over 30 years, the idea of what is an important work of art, what is museum worthy, has changed, for sure. And I would say now the curators are all very much of one mind that the most important thing for us to do is to tell stories. One of the things to keep in mind is that I suppose every museum really thinks about where they live and who their audience is. And Baltimore is probably close to 70% black. And this has an impact. This is obviously has a great impact on our audiences. Also, we, like others, have found that over the years, fewer and fewer people have had an art history background. And you cannot assume certain kinds of knowledge, and you have to start at a different point. That has an impact on our purchases, since we are talking about, first of all, acquisition policy here. And we don't actually have a specific policy on this, but we do have a mission statement. And the mission statement makes very clear that this narrative needs to speak to our audiences, or what else are we doing? To speak to your audience, you have to go where they are, or else you haven't gone to them. And this has consequences. So what I want to show is, I have three slides here. And the first two are objects that we have recently acquired, or I have in my part of the world, which is early modern Europe. And then the third slide is the first major installation that I did that was based on this principle of telling stories and what acquisitions you make in order to do that.
The green one, yeah.
This one?
Green, yeah.
Green. Green is go. Yeah. Oh, there we see this. Now, look, isn't that cool? Okay, what we see here is my kind of very simple mock-up that I do whenever I'm trying to reimagine an installation. So these are two different walls. We have very small Dutch collection, and they're in two rooms. The basic sense of the installation to fit the oddities of our collection is that this is a private collection, at the end of the 17th century, in the circle of William and Mary. Allows us to have lots of china, export china, et cetera, in there to liven the installation. Now, the issue here that we see here is the painting that's right in the center that I talked about this morning is a new acquisition, very new, has not been on view yet, and it is of five young Afro-Amsterdammers having a drink and a smoke in a tavern. Now, as far as I know, there is no other image like that in Netherlandish art, and probably not in early modern art. So the fascination of this is painting, not only art historically, because it's highly unusual, I'm very pleased we are acquired, but because one of our overall goals, I have a show on right now that involves six local artists. Four of them are African Americans working in our Italian collection. And what I hear over and over again is the importance of normalization from black artists, that they want to see their lives, their history, normalized and not exotic, and as not as exoticism. So even when we introduce contemporary art or anything into the museum, I personally have taken that very much to heart, and I do not want to exoticize them, but simply normalize that their history is just part of it all. So what you would see here, I put the this picture larger in the center so that you could sort of see it. It's not a great
I was wondering about the size, actually.
Oh, yes. the size is about like this.
That's good to mention. It was one of my questions.
But what you see here is, on the left, you see the painting in a grouping. These are two groupings of basically genre-type paintings. And it's simply one of those in the group at the left, with a quast, a Molinar, and what is that? What's that guy that's close to Overcamp but isn't? Exactly. So the idea here is very simple, to simply normalize. They live there, they're part of the community. They're a community in Amsterdam. There they are. But it is installed, would be the lower one rather than the higher one, so kids can get closer to it.
I am curious to the next slide, actually. What you have in store for us.
You want to see my next slide?
I want to see your next. I think we all want.
I see. Okay. I'll show you the next slide. We do not have a great Dutch collection. Okay. What you see, the larger picture on the right, I'll just say... I know I'm annoying you, but here...
No, you're not. No, we already discussed, you know, it needed to be on topic. And I have to check the time for you.
Okay,
but continue.
Okay.
I'm interested. We all are.
But the one on the right is our Rembrandt, as it were, because that's presumably Rembrandt playing a lyre by Leibniz. So that's really our best Dutch painting. Okay, moving right along. Okay, here's another proposed grouping. I don't actually have this as a mock-up, but here you have two sort of standard deftig couple here, buttoned to their nose around a small case that has small Dutch portraits in it, one pair of which is a pair by Poelenburg with a Susanna von Kulin in an Arcadian attire, very early example of Arcadian. And then there is a Willem Hontorst Arcadian type on the right. The painting on the far left, though, is one that we recently bought. Now here's a very clear example of what constitutes museum worthy. This painting is definitely workshop. Flink did the original. It's lost. A wonderful engraving was done on this that I think is well known and was in the show, a fascinating show at the Rembrandt House. And this would have been done after the print. I'm assuming that what happened, I mean, we know that many of these prints were made and that which proves this young woman obviously had admirers, or the people were interested in her. The painting was offered as an allegory of Africa. I myself am a little bit tired of every single picture of a person of African origin being considered an allegory. They are themselves. It's a portrait of a very attractive young woman. Then the format is modeled on a Titian that was then in Amsterdam. But what I wanted to show here is, okay, so this is an example of something that is not the greatest masterpiece, but in Baltimore, this will do great. No, in other words, she's very pretty. It's a very attractive work. If you don't have a flink next to it, you are not thinking, oh, how is this deficient? But the introduction of a very attractive young woman who is depicted here along with these others and shown with these others images of women who are trying to get a little bit away from the button to the nose attire, that this will be great. Now, the fact that she's on the end, somebody I'm sure will end up asking me, why is she on the end? Well, it will have to do with the whole setting there. There's a family portrait. There'll be a family portrait above, which is also not the greatest painting in the world, but it's an incredibly good example of how family portraits work in Holland. So in other words, what does it mean? What are you telling about somebody to do a portrait, and who commissions the portrait? This painting will tell all of those stories, not to mention with the guys across the room here.
And will you write that label, or will someone else do
course.
That?
Of course. No, no,
you will.
No, I will write it. No. We have an elaborate editing process, so lots of people will try to do something to it. The point is that children from the public schools or others, adults who come in here, one of the things that the artists in this current view have said, keep talking about, is the comfort factor of saying how comfortable they feel. They never thought they would feel comfortable in the Walters. And the reason they feel comfortable is because they keep saying, but my work looks so comfortable here. It looks fine next to these, you know, to Fra Filippo Lippi, you know? And that's, to me, I'm practically
But
in
is
tears.
It already on display is my question, because this is a mock-up arrangement, but is it already on view in a museum?
No, it's not.
It is not,
it's
okay.
Not.
Okay.
I always do these mock-ups, and then present them, and maybe somebody has a better idea, and we go on. And so now, I don't want to take forever. I'm just going to show you my third to show where we started with the idea of, you know, it's not only what constitutes great or workable or important isn't always, you know, your Guido Reni or your Rembrandt. All right, the next here is, in 2005 is when we did open the reinstallation of the old master collection, that my suite of three rooms of the Chamber of Wonders opened. At the time, we didn't have any natural history objects at all. We had one pearl that Henry Walters had kept in his pocket for luck. Well, this is now, you know, just sort of swarming with natural history objects. And some of these cost, in order to, because the director would not let me have any institutional money for this. So I had to get everybody, like feeding the penguin at the zoo for a year, to donate these. So we have one panel off on the side that has 150 names, about half of them children, actually, who donated. So I could get the price for a quill of an African porcupine down to $5. So we had lots of kids who were, you know, black
I'm
kids.
Sure they love it, right?
Yes, it's the most, by far the most popular part of the museum. But the idea that we could get black kids to give the money from earning from a summer job to the Walters for something was great. What can I say? And I think that was a kind of turning point. This is not the same as when you're buying a painting, but it certainly led us to understand that in creating a kind of environment in which people can both learn and enjoy themselves, that you can be flexible in how you approach this.
I'm really impressed, Joniv. I think it's a wonderful story, but it needs you to tell the story in the museum, I think, 24 hours.
Well,
I think it does. It needs you. I'm going to...
The Heemskerk in the middle of this room, is a giant painting. It's very famous. But if you look at it all by itself, you just sigh, you know, and walk on. Because it's got too many things going on. You don't know what it is. But it's the first painting of the Seven Wonders of the Ancient World.
Thank you, Joniv. I have to give the floor to others. Thank you so much. It's really wonderful. Really wonderful. Now, Charles, you just started. I mentioned 1st of March, so
that's
not 30 years at the museum, but you just started. So I think, you know, I think it's really wonderful that you joined this panel.
I'm thrilled to be here.
Because you just started, so really a warm welcome to you.
And, thank you.
You are going to mention a recent acquisition made by the Rijksmuseum. So
that's right.
I think we're all really curious to hear about it.
Of course. May I have the...
Yes, please.
And you Quentin, just to reassure you, I think I brought only one slide.
Perfect.
On the left of the screen is a drawing by Hendrik Buthoven, an Amsterdam-born artist who was actually eventually active in both Amsterdam and The Hague during the latter decades of the 18th century. It's just a little larger than an A4 size sheet of paper. It's black and white chalk on blue paper, and it was actually acquired in January, and it actually arrived just before I arrived, so I would like to think of it
welcoming as a present. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, one got an accession number and the other one didn't.
That's a different story.
Yeah. Now, I would like to think of this as an ideal case because, you know, as we, the Rijksmuseum and many other museums, as we all agree, as we try to actually think of new narratives and expand the kind of existing narratives in a way to incorporate different sort of stakeholders as well as audiences, you know, it becomes very difficult to find the kind of objects that really sort of fit really perfectly. And this is one of the rare cases we really saw three factors that really came together. One is, of course, a work by a Dutch artist, you know, whose output still sort of remains to be explored further. It has a lot of room for further research. And then the second part is actually its visual power, right? Its ability to actually engage the viewers through aesthetic as well as technical aspects. And then the third one is, of course, it is a portrait of a individual of color who was clearly present in the Netherlands, right, in sometime around 1780. And I think rather than a kind of a stock character that might show up in a conversation piece or a portrait, what I find really interesting is precisely that the artist, you know, who actually made a lot of other drawings that mainly focused on the poses and the costumes, here we see the artist actually changing the way he's handling the chalk to really sort of pay attention to the face. And I would really like to think of it as a kind of moment of encounter between an artist and an actual individual. And I always thought that this was a really fantastic sort of example of that. So in these three factors really came together with this one drawing, and I thought, you know, we really sort of felt that it was important for us to really display it. And we have, we managed to actually squeeze it into our calendar. So when it arrived, we had a very sort of short 1 month presentation in one of our cabinetes, one of the four small sort of drawings and prints dedicated galleries in the museum. And now we also recently launched a page specifically dedicated to the drawing within the broader rubric called Fris in the Collectie, or what's new in the collection. And those of you who are coming from the US, this is actually quite similar to what the New York Times has been doing with the kind of close look, where you can really zoom in on specific elements and actually learn more about it. So what I want to say, I know that we're running out of time, is that this is a very rare occasion. I think sometimes these three factors will not come together. It may be one or two that may actually come to us, and then we may have to actually then adapt ourselves to deal with that. But that's the reality of it, and I just wanted to say that I feel extremely fortunate to start my new job with this, such a fantastic example.
It's really a wonderful acquisition. So, congratulations. And finally, Jeroen. We still have 4 minutes left. Of course, working not that long in the Scheepvaart Museum, the Maritime Museum in this city. I think you started a few years ago?
4.5 years.
Already 4.5 years. You made a wonderful Van der Velde exhibition. I greatly enjoyed that. You are head of collections, and I'm really interested into what you have to say to us, because you did some wonderful things at the museum.
Thank you for having me. I realized that the Scheepvaart Museum, or National Maritime Museum, is a very specialist museum, of course. Every country has a maritime museum, although I think Switzerland might not have one, for obvious reasons. But of course, what you expect from a National Maritime Museum is we have models of ships, we have some paintings, and in the past, these paintings were largely collected because it had a ship on it. So it was not that important why it was good from an art historical perspective. It really was about ship models is easy, because otherwise collecting the big ships tends to, you need a very large ship museum, of course. And the same applies for the paintings. In 2019, we had a new mission statement for the museum. The previous one was the seagoing story, which basically was about why do people go to the sea, and what happens when they are on a ship. And we felt that a story mostly related to people who had been on ships, who had been sailing, who had worked for the Navy or the bigger merchant companies. But that is a very tiny portion of who actually visits the museum. So a new mission statement, which is Water Connects World. And for this mission statement to actually get an idea for the visitors that we are actually going through a new phase of how we present the collection, we also have a new main gallery, and that didn't exist before. For those of you who are familiar with the Scheepvaart Museum, you used to go to the museum and then you went up the stairs, and on the first floor there you saw the collection. So you went through the entire building, but unless you took the stairs, you never saw the collection. This is not a problem for visitors, of course, because they want to see objects, buy a ticket, and go upstairs. Sure. But we also have many people who come to the museum for an event. And these events are organized throughout the day. And the main gallery was also a good way for people to get, well, at least you could say, I had a great day at the museum listening to all kinds of talks, but also saw something what is really key to the museum. And that is this main gallery, which you call Republic at Sea. And your question was, do you need other objects for a new permanent display? Yes, we did. Because when we are focusing on Water Connect Worlds, we saw that the collection is actually very centered on Dutch maritime history. Very much about how the Dutch see their maritime history. And as you can see here, you see a very large painting. The large one we have is the Battle of Gibraltar. But there was no story about actually how the Spanish looked towards that battle. It was just about the Dutch being victorious at Gibraltar. And also another thing, interesting thing, I think, is these two portraits you can mostly see in the background. Most times, the Maritime Museum only collected the portrait with the man on it, because that is obvious. Not only he was the husband, but he was probably the admiral. And so we were interested in the admiral and not in the admiral's wife. Interestingly, this is Isaac Swiers, who is a famous admiral, but Constantia Bloemarts is actually more more famous and more interesting to than Isaac Swears. And I think that Isaac Swears only could become an admiral because he was married to Constantia. So that's something that we wanted to do as well. On the other hand, sometimes you have the problem that you want to tell something which you can't show through objects. And this is not a recent acquisition, this is something that's longer in the collection. A Brazilian landscape by Frans Post, of the time that this part of Brazil was Dutch. But Post has made something of a sort of, this could be the Netherlands without palm trees. And that was something that was bugging me for a long time. Because actually I wanted to show you, and this is the label that is next to it now, is that I wanted to tell the story about the 25,000 people who were working against their will, were brought from Africa to Brazil to work at the sugar plantation. That's something that Frans Post doesn't show. And here I really use the label to bring in that story, because we don't have any paintings by Frans Post where you can actually see people who are enslaved and working in these sugar refineries. This is a recent acquisition and something that raised an eyebrow with many people who say, well, what is the National Maritime Museum doing now? And it's not only because it is this little figurine, but also, shouldn't you be collecting ship models? Is that not your forte? Is this something that you really wanted to do? And yes, of course, this was something that we don't have much experience with. But when it comes to Water Connects Worlds, you want to tell the story how different parts of the world are connected and how shipping really plays an important role in connecting all these dots. The figurine was commissioned by a European. Then the ship sailed with the commission to China, and somewhere in China, someone produced a model of an African man, had never seen an African man before, so probably got a sketch and had an idea how an African man might look like. In Europe, it was considered that African people most times are portrayed with bracelets, but the Chinese model maker probably thought that this must be a very wealthy person, a very important person, but otherwise someone on the other side of the world wouldn't ask to make a model if it was not a very important person. So he put it on a lotus leaf, which is quite common in China when it comes to gods and that sort of thing. Then the figurine came back with a ship to Europe as well. So in a way, we want to tell the story with this figurine, how shipping brings people together, also their ideas, their misconceptions, their prejudices, and it all shows in this figurine. When we bought it, we actually put it on a sort of standalone presentation first for a couple of months and put a box next to it and said, well, we've purchased this figurine, but what would you like to know about it? How would you like to present it? Do you find it offending? Why do you find it offending? Can we have your email or telephone number? Because we want you to have you on a panel.
You called people?
Well, the interesting thing is that the box was filled with people leaving their email address. When we contacted everyone, no one actually wanted to come for a meeting. I don't know why that is going wrong, but sorry, I had to admit that. So that horribly went wrong, but in a way, it was good to have these discussions because we really saw people discussing this image because it was not part of another presentation. Now it is, of course, and we still have these discussions, but at the time. And about the same time we bought this painting, as I already mentioned, we buy portraits with admirals. This usually would be a portrait with a label next to it, Portrait of Admiral Cornelis Tromp. I decided for the Republic at Sea exhibition to at least say, with an unknown man, because we don't know anything about him. Yes, we could say it's an African man or it's a black man, but we actually don't even know the relationship between Tromp and this person. The interesting thing is that Cornelis Tromp has been portrayed four times, several times, or at least four times with a black person in his vicinity, which is also something that we wanted to tell with the public and say, well, is there a story? don't we know, is there an aspect we don't know about Cornelis Tromp? Was there a servant? Or was this just something that Ferdinand Bol put in? Because that's also known, of course. So in a way, we wanted to tell a different story about maritime history, and also a story that relates to more people that are coming into the museum that are not from, have a maritime background and also are not from the Netherlands and still relate to this kind of story.
I'm really curious to see the labels that accompany these objects. You might want to change them occasionally? Or
yes, we do. Yeah. I think... Well, we are very open to this, that many we have also a library on the ground floor, and many people walk in and start discussing what they have seen in the museum. And sometimes they say, well, I take offense about a label, and say, well, just point out the label, and we talk with the curators about it and see where we can change this. So, yes, every couple of months there is something that I change, also with objects, by the way. And I think with the Chinese model you saw, that we have it now for 3 years, we now have the fifth label. Yeah. Because sometimes someone says, well, there was a line about the Chinese didn't know about slavery.
Yeah.
And someone said, well, there was slavery, but it was not that people from Africa were enslaved and worked in China. So that was one of the reasons why we changed it. So I think it's a constant...
Work in progress. Thank you very much. I did check the time, so we're sort of running out of time, and we're going to listen...